You're listening to Beyond the Campaign, and this is episode number 15. Welcome to Beyond the Campaign. I'm your host, Michelle Glogovac, podcast publicist, author, and host of this show and Read the Damn Book. Here, you're going to learn from political candidates and from politicians. We're not just going to talk about the issues. We're going to talk about the human beings who are investing themselves in us so that we can invest ourselves in them. This is Beyond the Campaign. Hey friends, welcome back to another episode. I'm your host, Michelle Glogovac, and this episode is not just airing on Beyond the Campaign, but also on Read the Damn Book, because my guest, Dakari Lariat, is the author of Don't Flush. It is a memoir about his experience of his false arrest in Michigan. He is now running for Senate in Alabama, and he is sharing his experiences, his journey, all of what has brought him to where he is today. It is an incredible story, and I love the comparison to lasagna, which you will understand once you hear Dakari's story. Hello, Dakari.
Hello, Michelle.
I'm so excited to talk to you. I'm just and your smile is just so bright. I'm like, this is going to be good.
Likewise. Thank you so much for having me today. Really honored when I look at all your past guests.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. And it's a work in progress, but I love being able to get to know who our elected officials are and who is running for office, because this is a big deal to be representing people, and we need to get to know you all. So on that note, can you introduce yourself to everyone, please?
Sure. So I'm a born and raised Alabamian, lifelong lover of animals, travel, and army brat. And someone who's been working for the community for the last 20 years. So in advocacy for homelessness, advocacy for those impacted by addiction. And then when I moved back to Alabama in the midst of the pandemic, got on the board of University of Alabama Alumni Association and advocated for cost-effective and quality access to education for all. So that's what I've been doing most of my adult life. And now I'm a candidate for United States Senate.
I love it. So it's so much. And you left out a lot too, because you're also an author. Your book, Don't Flush, is out, and I read it cover to cover. So this will air on both podcasts because there's a book involved. So we have to have it on Read the Damn Book too.
Wonderful.
But then you're also an entrepreneur with your dog aromatherapy. What exactly is, because that was, I'm like, wait, what is this in the book? What are we reading about?
Yeah. So it started and was inspired by my pet Dada. So a 14-year-old poodle. And at the time he was a puppy that was afraid of thunderstorms. And I just tried everything to soothe him and get him to stay asleep at night. And one day I bought an aromatherapy candle, burned it, and it was the first night that he went to sleep and then I got sleep. And it just spawned 20 different products after that. So sprays, shampoos, breath sprays, everything.
I love it. It's so sweet. You're like, I just wanted to help the dog, and poof, here we go.
Right.
So the dog really helped you too.
Yeah, he did. So now they're sold all over the U.S. and Canada, and we have very loyal customers in Japan as well.
I love it. This is amazing. An international company. That's so incredible. And now we'll go back to serious stuff, because I want to talk about your book and what your experience was and the reason behind it, why you wrote it, and how it plays such an important role today. Because I do feel we have a lot of representatives who don't have the lived experience that you now do. And I've been so impressed. I think I wrote this in my book review, that it's not just lived experience, but you have so much knowledge and the tools necessary to do the job that is ahead of you based on the jobs that you've had in the past. But now you've also got this experience of what happened in Michigan. Can you share that with everyone?
Yeah. So I talked a little bit earlier about my 20 years of public service, but I was always kind of advocating for these communities. And to your point, last year while I was driving through the state of Michigan, I was falsely arrested by the state police, subjected to countless sobriety tests, gaslit to believe that I was failing them, and accused of driving under the influence of drugs, accused of smuggling drugs into the jailhouse. And at one point, I was even forced to use the restroom in front of the booking officers and the troopers. And that became the name of my book, Don't Flush. And several months later, after fighting for the FOIA and body cam and evidence, received that and realized that the troopers were attempting to plant drugs in my vehicle. So I am still fighting for justice from that day. And I've started to author a policy around disclosure of body camera and evidence to the public. And many cases, the victim in my case, right? Because we're seeing that this evidence is being weaponized against us. It's being withheld, it's being edited, and then shared with judges who then rule summarily on qualified immunity and dismiss the case.
And I appreciated the way that you also spoke so openly about how you asked local politicians to help from the governor right on down, and that everyone, well, it's a legal issue. Well, yeah. And guess what? You're a politician and your job is the law.
Yeah. All
It's
three
so
branches of
disappointing.
government failed me. Yeah, I thought about it one day. I said, all three branches of government failed me. Governor Whitmer's office, the executive branch, the most senior branch, are individual within the state. The local police, my legislators wouldn't, do anything. They made a few introductions and that was it. And then the judge that looked at what was not evidence, because I actually had to send the body and dash cam to an audiovisual analyst. And they said, there's no metadata here. This is not evidence. And it really bolstered our theory that the videos have been tampered with.
It's unreal. There's just no justice, and it's
No.
gross, and it's sad, and it's enraging, you know.
Yes.
But and at the same time, enlightening that it happened to you. Like, not that there should be a reason, but you're someone who, and I think you even said this in the book, that if it happened to somebody else, the outcome could be very, very different, because it does happen to other people who go along with, okay, you're going to accuse me of this, I might as well just say, yep. Whatever.
Yeah.
And then they don't fight it. And you have had the means to fight it. And then now to say, you know what? I'm in a position to run for office to make these changes so that others don't have to go through it.
Oh, exactly. And in this experience, I've met so many other victims of police misconduct, even precisely victims of these two troopers. So they've reached out to me on social media and shared their stories. And one person actually did admit to something that they really didn't do, but they wanted to get off. They wanted to get out of the situation expediently. And it's just so sad.
It's disheartening. And
Yeah.
so at what point can you share with everyone that you decided, you know what, I'm going to run for
Yeah,
I'm just going to do it. I'm going to run for Senate. Like, you don't just wake up and think that.
it was that frustration of realizing that everyone was failing me and not advocating for me and not doing their job, frankly, not doing their job, not upholding the law. At one point, I literally tried to file a police report against the police. And I was basically laughed at. And I said, this is your evidence. This is state evidence. I finally had, after 5.5 months, got that body cam. And I was told, we are not going up against the state. We're not fighting against them. And I said, I've got to be positioned in a way to write the laws and administer justice because this isn't working. This advocating from the outside and hoping that someone in Michigan's vast political arena is going to do something. And I want to change the laws federally.
Because it starts. There's so much done at the local level and then at the federal level, and we need change across the board. And
Yes.
so I think so many don't realize that there is a lot at the federal level, but local level is so important because we have officers like this, and a lot of these positions are elected, and it just trickles down. Take me to Alabama. I know this is where you grew up, and you're in the downtown loft. I can see
Yeah.
because you write about this too. I got all the feels. We can see I've read the book.
I
And you grew up there, and even your childhood, like even your religion, they've all played a major role in who you are today. you know, so I was raised Catholic, but we had a lot of Jehovah's Witnesses in the area, and I was always willing to talk to them. My mom was like, "What are you? You're not converting?" I'm like, "No, but they're nice, and they're just they're just coming by. Like, what's the harm?"
Right, right. That's how it started for us. So, baptized Catholic. My mom was Catholic. The whole family. And we converted to Jehovah's Witness. And that's how I was raised. And it, incredibly conservative. And it's so funny to think about it. But a lot of those skill sets like door knocking and proselytizing, it translates very well to politics, even though they're apolitical.
Right, I'm sure. Nobody's apolitical these days.
Well, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses don't vote. Yes, it's a mandate that they don't participate in politics. So this is completely 180 degrees from how I was raised.
Oh, I did not know that. And you know, we're talking so much with religion and America and politics right now. It's interesting that that has not come up in any conversation I've had so far. That is interesting. I knew that they don't celebrate certain holidays and whatnot. Yes. But I didn't know that they don't vote. That's amazing.
Yes.
How sad. Oh, how sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
So much. There's so much to learn still. And so this is your childhood. You left, obviously, that religion. And at what point did you leave and say, you know what? Nope, not for me.
That came in college. I want to say about 21. And it was a mixture of seeing a broader world, being exposed to different religions and perspectives, and then also coming out. And at that point, I just saw too many things that made staying in that religion not feasible. And I took a long break from religion, about 20 years, where I didn't think there was any religion or home for me. And that's one of the aspects of the religion, too, is that they believe they're the only true religion. So when you leave it, you just kind of feel like, what am I doing it? Period. Right. And then when I came back to Alabama, I discovered United Methodist Church through a friend. And that's where I've been ever since.
I love that you were on a podcast. I don't know if it was last week or the other day, and they asked you about wearing jeans to church.
Yes. Gosh, that was so unusual. I was like, what's going on here?
Me too. I'm like, I'm just going to scroll through your social media. And I came across that one. I went, what? What podcast are you on where they're asking about jeans in church? This is...
Right, right.
Maybe that's a question I need to start asking. I don't know.
Well, it was very foreign to me. You know, that's what you start to see as you move away from like your core religion. And it's so different from how I was raised because you only went to your church. I didn't even have exposure to the Baptist, for example, unless it was maybe a family member's funeral or wedding. So it was just 100% Jehovah's Witness all the time. So now I feel, at least in this process for sure, I have to go out and see so many different religions and perspectives, and I'm learning along the way.
I love that. I think I've been saying, somebody told me over the weekend that I'm curious, and that is why I am the way I am. And it hit me this week that curiosity, and now that I've said this term, I'm using it ridiculously, but I believe that a lack of curiosity is what breeds hate. And the more curious we are, the more open we become. And if we teach our children that, then we're going to be in a much different place than we are right now.
Agreed.
I want to talk also about how you in the, like a, not your co-op, but you run the board of the, like a housing association, and how I feel like that kind of really spawned you being able to create changes in the way you look at things. Take us through that.
Yeah, it's a small anecdote, but as I was kind of thinking about what prepared me for this moment, because you get that question a lot, why not city council? Or, you know, most people start with the house. Everyone's journey is different. And I think we need new skill sets in our leaders. And one of the things that I learned here was how to organize, how to win when you don't necessarily have the votes or the official power. And in my building, we were battling the developer. They were controlling the building. They weren't releasing the seats so that we could take control of the building. And they were refusing to make critical repairs to the structure. So I had to go outside of the building to gain influence. So building allies with the mayor's office and with the city council president, regulatory bodies. I even had to reach out to the state bar because there were lawyers that were sort of facilitating this abuse of power and build that coalition with the other owners within the building. My first election actually for board member, and now I'm treasurer and likely going to be the next president of the board. And it's a complex building because it has commercial and residential, and it's 120 years old. So, something's always challenged and breaking. So it has been kind of a really crash course in civics.
And the way that you look at it and you attack kind of the problem, I feel like is unique because you don't, ju it's not just that you're going in there and you're screaming and yelling and like, this is how it just has to change. You really take your time in analyzing all of the issues and the way you can fix it and that sort of a thing.
Right. It's analysis. There's some hard skills, but then there's the soft skills. It's like changing hearts and creating coalition. And that's, again, those are the skill sets we've got to send to Washington. I always joke around with my lawyer friends, we don't need any more lawyers in Congress. Business
It's
people
true.
know how to get it done. MBAs know how to get it done.
Yes. And take us through your regular career too, because these are all like one-off things, and yet you had a corporate career too.
It's interesting. They're like it's like lasagna. There's so many different layers, and I think they all strengthen
You are very layered. Yes.
the final dish. But yeah, it's all sitting on 20 years of experience in corporate America. So I, as my origin story, graduated from University of Alabama and could not find work here in the state. So, and like many people, you graduate from these great schools like University of Alabama, and then you're underemployed, or you have to go to Atlanta, or you have to go to New York. And I ended up in New York and started working in corporate supply chain, initially for the apparel industry, and then moved into cosmetics. So working for Louis Vuitton, working for L'Oreal, and then most recently, executive role at Whirlpool Corporation. And that's what brought me to Michigan. So that's why I still had some loose ends up in Michigan, and I was selling my home when the incident happened.
I love this. You're so layered and all of these things. And then you're a ballet dancer too. Can we
I
let's dive into
was, I
that?
was. So, yeah, it's funny. It's it just kind of ties into my education journey. My mom is a teacher and has been a teacher most of my life, so like almost 40 years. And we knew that our local schools in Birmingham were failing. They're just so challenged and not funded properly, and the teachers aren't paid well. And what she did is she got me into charter schools or magnet schools where I would have better opportunities, more dedicated teachers, facilities, et cetera. And I ended up at the Alabama School of Fine Arts. So it's just a couple blocks from where I live now in downtown Birmingham. And it's just an amazing institution where you can study whatever art that you love, including math and science. So I started in math and science and somehow just got exposed to ballet. Maybe I saw a performance or something happening in the school, and it just became my passion. So I still love the art form. I don't dance now, besides like in a nightclub every now and then, but it
I don't
was
know.
my
You couldn't have danced
passion.
in last night. I was ready to jump off the couch and dance.
Oh, I know, I know. Yeah, last night was very special, and I think it's a good platform for next year. It shows what can happen when we show up and we show out.
It's definitely been needed, and I think it shows the example of this is what happens when we put in the time and the effort, and we collaborate with each other. And now we face a year more, as you know, but I think that this is the encouragement we needed to keep going for the next
It can
year.
happen. Yeah. And the votes are
Yes.
there. But the thing that's just so, we've got to keep on it and be diligent and visible. And last night was like the official launch for my book, Don't Flush. And while we filled the room, we filled the seats, it should have been standing room. And what someone whispered in my ear was that a lot of the professors wanted to come, but they were afraid. They were afraid that attending a Democratic event would put a target on their back. And we've heard about these professors being terminated from state schools. There's one individual at Auburn University, our rival, to University of Alabama, that made a comment about Charlie Kirk, and she was terminated. And I'm like, wow, that is the world that we're in right now. So we've got to be visible, we've got to be diligent, and we've got to keep fighting.
Yes, I've had friends who have said, you know what, I was being vocal. Now I'm a little more afraid. I don't know. I have to step back. And I mean, I've got little kids, and yet I'm like, mommy might get arrested someday, and it's
Well, see, when we speak out and we show out, like we can win. There are more of us, I think, that want to see change and progress.
I
We've got
think
to
that's what
remember
last
that.
night proved. I think
Right.
that that's what we saw last night, because it felt like a year ago this week that it felt like we were outnumbered
Yeah.
in when we looked at the numbers. But seeing that last night we had so many more come out, and
Turnout.
that, you know, I'm in California, so we voted on Prop 50, and to see
Yeah.
that many people come out when it
For a
wasn't
prop.
about a name on the ballot.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah. That's
that
great.
is what we need. Yes. What would you say is the issue that you're most passionate about? They're all important, but is there
Yeah.
one that you were like, that's it, that's my issue,
Yeah.
that's what I want to tackle?
You know, I'm a public servant, so I have to listen. And what Alabamians say is most important is finally investing in education, because that's the starting point. That ultimately sets us up to stop being dead last in economic opportunity and in health and all these other trickle-down things, but it's an investment. And I've seen it work in my family. My grandfather graduated from a three-room Rosenwald school with an eighth-grade education. He invested in my mom's education. He sent them to Catholic school. She ultimately went to an HBCU and met my dad. And then from there, you know, they invested in me, and I'm here talking to you today. So that's what education does, but it takes time to get there. And if we can just start the investment now in a generation, we're going to see a real difference here in Alabama. So that is the priority. That is the first pillar of this campaign. And then the next two are healthcare and economic opportunity for all.
There's so, and they all go hand in hand. You know,
Yeah,
we
it's a
need,
virtuous cycle.
it is. We need healthcare for our children. We need food for our children, and that way they can be educated. And
Right.
yes, and you need money for all of that. It is a cycle that I think many are piecemealing it, when really we need all of this in order to succeed, to have our children succeed. Because if they don't succeed, then the rest of us just fail. So
Right.
yeah,
And
I
then that
absolutely love that.
also dovetails into my passion for criminal justice. So we have this, you know, school to prison pipeline. Why don't we invest in our schools instead of taking money from the education trust fund to build more prisons and feed those prisons, right, by over-policing and over-expelling Black youth? So it's all interconnected, Michelle.
How red is Alabama compared to, like, how likely is it that you are going to bring this blue where we need it to be? I haven't looked at the numbers or where things are skewed, but I mean, Alabama's the South, so.
It is. So I go into that very aware that we are a plus 15 state, meaning we typically lean plus 15 and they have that natural advantage. But there are so many blue dots and counties within the state, and we have a track record of electing Democrats every once in a while and when the moment's right. So Senator Doug Jones comes to mind, Governor Don Siegelman. So these are friends here in Alabama and inspirations, and they were able to build a coalition. And that's what we're doing now by talking to everybody, everyone throughout the state about this message, about kitchen table issues.
I love the kitchen table. It keeps coming up. I know it was on last night. My husband even said that. He's like, CNN just keeps saying kitchen table. I'm like, yeah, because we're all talking at the kitchen table. These are the issues we're talking about at night at dinner. And yes, I love that. And I think that last night also proved that we can swim blue, that it is very
I like
likely,
that.
even in the reddest parts, people see. Because we don't, I don't think anymore that it is red versus blue. It is people. It is neighbors, it's community. And I really believe that that's what we're leaning towards. So I'm extremely hopeful for you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we've got to just message the policy. And we talked so much about that. In fact, the first couple of months of the campaign, we didn't even talk about party affiliation. It was really just policy, policy, policy. Let's talk about the policy. Now, obviously, we've got to start to differentiate ourselves within the primary for the Democrats, but it is about those issues that impact people every day. And we try to focus all the communication back to that. Like, how does this impact you today in your daily life?
I love that. I'm so excited for you. Can you share with everyone where they can find you, follow you, donate, volunteer, do all the things?
Yes. So check me out at DakariLariette.com. And our social media is going to be Dakari Lariette for Senate. Learn more there. There's a get involved button. There's a donate button. And we need your support coast to coast, because this is an opportunity to win back our Senate and get the legislative branch working for us again, because I don't know what they've been doing for the last year. And we've got to get them functional again and really fighting and administering their Article I powers.
Yes. Thank you so much. Thank you for not just talking to me, but for taking this on and really fighting for all of us. I appreciate you.
Oh, thank you, Michelle. Thank you for everything you do. And thanks for sharing these stories and messages.
Friends, we all have unique experiences and knowledge that shape who we are. And having that variety of experiences and the people that represent us is extremely important. It's important not just to have the lived experience, but to have that knowledge on how to fix things. And I believe that Dakari is someone who can do that because he brings that kind of experience with him. He is running for Senate, and I am so excited to cheer him on all the way from California to Alabama. I'm telling all my cousins about him, and I look forward to seeing what he can do for the rest of us, because he is someone who wants to represent each and every single one of us, not just those in Birmingham or in Alabama, but coast to coast, all of America. Remember to listen to your candidates just as they're listening to us, so that we can get beyond the campaign.